Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. We are here Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, and we are also archived at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. We encourage you to also go to our links to each of our radio program's guests and see what they have to offer you. If it resonates with you, wonderful. If not, hey, we ask you to keep searching. Check the next guest and the next guest. I mean, good heavens, we have over 9 years of programs. 9 times 52, you do the math, I don't have time. And we encourage you to go to their website and check out what they have to offer, whether it's CDs, books, workshops, seminars, phone conferencing, Skype conferencing, or sessions, whatever the case might be. We really want you to find the support, encouragement, inspiration, assistance, education that you need to move forward in your life's purpose, as we are trying to do here. And we're going to continue doing just that on today's program. We are going to basically have a little bit of a celebration, a little ceremony, and we're going to call it life. Yes, indeed, a ceremony of life. A Ceremony Called Life is the title of the book, Ceremony Called Life. When your morning coffee is as sacred as holy water. We're going to be talking with Sky. Her website, I'm going to give that to you right now, is Teya Sky. That's TeyaSky.com. We'll give that again later in the program as well. And Sky, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
This is actually a lot of fun, because I know that a lot of times, the only time we hear about celebrating someone's life is after they're gone. But we're not waiting until after they're gone, are we?
Exactly. No, we're not. A ceremony called life, this is such a wide metaphor, right? Because we look at the ceremonies as, like you just mentioned, when someone passes, or even when someone's born, or a wedding, or a rite of passage. But when we actually zoom out from these really special moments, these significant moments that we attend in our lives, we can perhaps extend that appreciation and that sense of sacredness and that sense of honor to all of life. And so that's what the invitation of the book is about, is in realizing that this celebration and this deep honoring for the moments that we experience is available in all moments.
Well, I know that there is and I always get these two confused. I don't remember if it was Teresa Neumann or Teresa Avila who is quoted as saying that God is amongst the pots and the pans. And that, just as your metaphor or your example, for example, of morning coffee as holy as sacred as holy water, it is the same. It's the same concept. And yet there are certain cultures who have maintained that. But here in the West, it's almost like we've just kind of like, I don't know, thrown out the baby with the bathwater when we came to the new world, no matter when it was, as our ancestors did over the last, say, 500 years or so. We just kind of thrown all that out, and we have this attitude collectively of, we're Americans and we're going to do it our own way. Doesn't matter if another country has been doing it another way that's really working for its citizens for 5,000 years, like China with their medicine, we don't care. We're going to find our own way. And eventually it seems like we end up going back to those old ways that they have been using, and it's been working for them. But I guess we just have to go through that learning process, that trial and error process, and, oh, maybe that will work.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of it has to do with just how fast we're going. And when you mention the other cultures and how we can look to other cultures to see some ways of life that have perhaps been well preserved, we can even just glance at indigenous cultures. And a lot of them are still honoring their roots. And a lot of their culture is about connecting to the earth and gratitude and praying to Great Spirit, right? It's this simplicity. And in our culture, in our Western culture, we are so focused on ambition and striving and becoming that we end up going so fast and so far away from ourselves. And so a lot of the healing or the resolution is just right there. It's almost like I have this vision right now as I'm speaking of like reeling the fishing line back in. Just instead of reeling ourselves out to get something or to go faster or to achieve, it's reeling that fishing line back into ourselves to just reconnect with the simplicity of being. And the beautiful, funny, and just natural thing that happens from there, what I see, is that then we start to see the meaningfulness that is everywhere.
You know, I moved to Santa Barbara 10 years ago, 10 and a half years ago, if you will, and I've been wanting to get to the ocean. Now, I had never specified where, so winding up in Santa Barbara was pretty miraculous, considering the woman that I've been with for almost 20 years. She's a native of this particular city. And the other day I was walking along the beach and I actually had to stop myself, literally stop physically, and look out over the water and remind myself, you're here. You have made it. You've been here for 10 years. This is what you've been looking for. And of course, even when we talk about moving, you know, I say, well, how far is that from the ocean? That's always my question. How far is it from the ocean? And of course, we don't have a beach. We do not have a beachfront property that we're living on. We live up in the mountains above Santa Barbara. But I mean, we're talking about maybe 10-minute drive down the hill and across to the beach. And, you know, you're there. Boom. The thing that I find so fascinating is that a lot of people here, they kind of forget that. You hear the grumblings, the moanings and the groanings of people about, and I hear it even coming out of my own mouth going, oh my gosh, the construction on the roads is as bad as when I was living in Phoenix and, you know, that kind of stuff. Are they ever going to finish? And on and on and on. And we do forget not only where we live, but what we have, who we are. And that's something else I wanted to ask you about is that whole aspect, because you've been on quite a journey yourself in your short, what, 32 years, 33 years. We have forgotten, and this is the way this was phrased to me. I was asking this question in regards to human evolution of one of my guests. And I asked him, I said, so where do you see us evolving to as a species, not as a civilization, as a culture, as a society, but as a species, as human beings? What are the next future generations going to be? And I says, is it going to be discovering who we are? You know, he said, oh, no, it's discovering who or what we've always been. I'm curious as to your perspective on that. Where do you see us evolving to?
You know, it's such a big question, and it's also a very fair one that I think we all ask ourselves, whether just in regard to ourselves in our own lives or as a collective, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I see is, of course, this dance of light and dark and how significantly it is playing out in our culture right now and in the world around us. And because of like how strong it is right now with everything that's going on, of course we see how strong the darkness is that's still that's just still quite strong within people,
mm-hmm,
and within the collective. But we also have the chance to see how strong the light is and how much that light is growing. And, you know, we don't even need to look much further in this moment, in this conversation, than the Bernie Sanders movement and how many people rallied behind him. And, you know, if we just did a little digging on the internet, we could even see photos and videos and just the massive amount of people that this man was inspiring. Millions of people across the country. And this is an older Jewish man who, by those standards alone, would often just maybe not have as great of a chance.
And I have to say, I'm going to add real quickly to that. I have to say, I was really impressed by one person who was interviewed on a program just recently. And this was to me profound, and it goes to what you're saying. This woman said, it was the first time I was ready to vote for someone and not have to vote for someone because I was voting against someone else.
Exactly. And so even just by looking at the massive well of support that's happened because for him and through him, we can see that more people than ever are ready to move into a more light-filled way of being, call it compassion, call it equality, you know, call it whichever aspect of that love that you want to call it. But we see it around us more than ever. And so as far as the direction that we're going in goes, I feel and I see that it's a direction of love and that it is a remembering of who we've always been and who we are right now within us. It's always there.
I'm curious about your journey, what you have been through, what have you experienced, and more in particular, what influences have there been in your life that have brought you to this place?
Well, the most succinct way that I can offer you a sort of landscape of my life is that I grew up in a dysfunctional and abusive family. And there were lots of gifts there as well. It wasn't like, you know, always some horrible experience. But the point is there's a lot of dysfunction, there's abuse, and it had a really big impact on me and the wounding that I experienced from growing up in that environment. And the thing is, as a child, I was always quite connected to what I only called truth. I didn't really have a big spiritual inclination, but I had some sense of what was true and what wasn't. And so I could see within my family that there was a huge sense of operating not on truth, but on dysfunction. And I did my best, and I vowed to maintain my own clarity, and I could see that things weren't right, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I got older, what happened was that when I was in my mid-20s, I had thought that I was, like, fine from my childhood because I was aware that it was difficult, and I was always, you know, doing my best with myself, and I was fine, right? Totally nothing to look at there. But what actually happened was, when I was working in the music industry, at the same time that I was becoming so fed up with working basically 24/7 for a career where I could never come first in my own life, right at that same moment, I had this very challenging experience with a guy I was dating. And I saw all of my patterns and all of that wounding from my childhood just like explode in front of my eyes. And it was undeniable that there was stuff to look at and that there was more potential and freedom to experience in my life than what I had known in that moment. And so this was a really pivotal moment. And so basically, I just, as soon as I realized the extent to which I was limiting myself by not working through these conditions and this unresolved material from my childhood, I just made it my absolute mission to start working through it and looking at it and discovering who I really was without all of that, dysfunction and ideas and career and all of that stuff that I think a lot of us go through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a funny too. I have to say that, you know, I've talked with so many different people over the years and with this program and others. And of course, you know, they discuss and talk about, you know, their families. You hear of this story, especially around the holidays where, oh, yeah, we get around the Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner table and it's dysfunction. You know, we've got a supersized dysfunction at the table. And I look back at my growing up with my family, a family of eight. And we had our disagreements, we had our squabbles, we had this and that and the other, but I can't remember, I'm not saying that it was necessarily Norman Rockwell, but a Norman Rockwell painting, but it certainly wasn't to the level that I don't want to go home for Christmas because, I have to deal with my family. We went back in June of this past year to my parents' 60th wedding anniversary. The whole family was there, you know, and it was great. And even with relatives, you know, I mean, there wasn't this, And I go, wow, how does stuff like that, how does it get started? Because, again, I haven't experienced it in my family.
Blessing.
Yeah. So I guess I am. I'm very fortunate in that regard. I'm happy that it's turned out that way. I actually hate dealing with that kind of conflict. And sometimes, in order for me to really avoid the real dramas, whether I'm having to call one of my vendors, like my cell phone service or my internet service or whatever, I'll vent maybe with my wife or somebody else, saying, you know, I wish I could do this, and I'd say this, and that, which I would never do, because I know good and well that if I go at them attacking, I'm never going to get what it is that I want or even get close to it. Matter of fact, they may even hang up on me and cut my service off. And I don't want that. So it's a whole different dynamic. But when we're talking about a ceremony called life, and we're talking about celebrating one's life, matter of fact, back in 2002 in August, when my wife had finished a full year of recovery from cancer surgery and chemotherapy and so forth, I actually held a birthday party for her, because, in a manner of speaking, she was, and I'll use the term, born again. So we celebrated her life, and we had a bunch of family and friends over, and I created this CD with music and this and that and the other. And because it was really important to me to acknowledge the fact that, hey, she's still here. And she wants to be here, and she wants to do things, and she wants to accomplish things, and she wants to continue living her life's purpose. But a lot of folks, they get, I guess, is the term, they just get stuck?
Often many people are getting stuck, or whatever their variety of challenge is. For many people, it's getting stuck.
Tell me
how... For other people, it can be... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, just tell me how you support and encourage people. How do you get people unstuck? What's your method? What's your modality?
I just can't help but laugh, just because it's so huge. It's such a huge conversation and issue, and it's just so important to talk about it. My modality in the personal, private sessions that I give is I support people in shifting their subconscious. Because like 96-97% of our mind is subconscious. And what that means is we have no idea what's in there, and often would be shocked if we did. And it's full of beliefs that we consciously don't necessarily agree with or think that we have, but they're in there from our experiences and the associations our subconscious makes. And so often what I do with people to support them in becoming unstuck or move through whatever is relevant to their life and whatever might be challenging them, is I look clairvoyantly into their subconscious, and also through conversation. Sometimes you can just hear directly what's going on in there, pick up on it, and discover what's in there and go to the root of when it began and just shift it. And, you know, it's funny to just say it as simply as, and just shift it. But the thing that amazes me is how difficult people often believe healing and resolution is, because it doesn't need to be. I mean, yes, sometimes we go on long journeys with our healing stories, and sometimes it's just such a long, hard journey, and we've tried everything, and it's still a mystery why it's happening. Absolutely. But also, there is a lot of healing and resolution we can do just between ourselves and the divine or God or whatever you want to call this beautiful essence that is everyone and everything. And of course we have access to it, because we are literally made of it. So yeah, this is how I support people in shifting whatever is going on that they want to move through. And I just like to add that this is what also a ceremony called life is about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because other than just celebrating all the beauty that there is, which is so important that we open our eyes to that, because it fills our hearts, right? But other than that celebration, it's also moving through our vulnerability and our challenges to move into the gifts that they have to offer us on the other side.
Let's talk about that in the context of, and the reason I bring this up, as I share with our listeners, and in terms of the context of the questions that I ask, the universe asks the questions, and I'm just along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
And the same applies, for example, when I receive a review copy. For example, I have the review copy of A Ceremony Called Life, when your morning coffee is as sacred as holy water. And there's this little insert, this little piece of paper in here that I won't go into, but it's where it's placed in the book. Now, if there was a particular passage or what have you that was on one of these two pages where this insert is, I might focus on that. But it's in a particular chapter. Now, you probably didn't place it there, but I always think there's a reason why that's there. So I go back to the beginning of the chapter, and I want you to share with us, if you can, in the context of acknowledging these gifts, talk to us about making friends with the ego and the mind, because I have heard, especially when talking about meditation, that you've got to quiet, you've got to tell the mind to shut up. But I've also heard other techniques where you do something a little different. Tell me about that, and whether it's in context of meditation or otherwise, in regards to A Ceremony Called Life.
Yeah, another really good and important question. So, of course, we've heard so many times, right, that meditation or spirituality is about getting rid of the ego and having a silent mind. And that's not true. I mean, for sure, some people might be teaching that, but any true spirituality is always including all of us, every aspect of us. There's no rejection, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, that rejection is the core wound that spirituality aims to heal. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's so funny. And I say that with so much love, and I've been there myself as well, and often can find myself there again. But it's just so funny when we start rejecting ourselves as a way to be more spiritual or be in more peace, and because it's just creating that separation even more. And so, yeah, this idea that we need to silence our mind, well, also, we can't. We can't just decide, oh, I'm going to silence my mind or start to control our mind, because that's just the mind talking to the mind. It's just insanity. But we can support ourselves in dropping into a deeper space within, where we can actually just simply witness the mind, which is what meditation is all about. Because then when we just are dropping into that space where there is space between this essence or this awareness that we are and all the thoughts that come and go, then we can perhaps realize that we have a choice sometimes to make about how much influence we're going to allow our thoughts to have over ourselves. In other words, this idea that we need to silence our mind is taking us away from the true gift of meditation, which is that when those challenging thoughts come, we can breathe into ourselves, we can see that they're passing, and we can see that we are something eternal and that this moment is going to pass. And also, so importantly, is that we can allow ourselves to have whatever feelings we're having, go through whatever it is that's happening, even if our thoughts are just going on and on and they're so difficult and they're bringing up so much pain. Spirituality and meditation and everything that we're talking about isn't about getting rid of those experiences. It's about dropping into them from a space of, you can call it love or just the awareness that we are, and holding ourselves through these challenging moments. So that, like I said before, we can cross the bridge into meaning. And also, you asked about the ego, so just to touch on it really quickly, it's essentially the same thing. When we are looking to get rid of our ego, we're trying to get rid of a part of ourselves. And the funny thing is that the only thing that could ever come up with that idea in the first place is the mind. So, yeah, we ought to learn about the ego and learn about the mind so that we can work with the entirety of our being in a more intelligent way that supports ourselves, that supports how we wish to be living our lives, right? And we can have a healthier relationship with the ego and with the mind. And that's really what it's about, right? It's just not being dominated by these aspects of ourselves, but making sure that we are living and behaving from the truth of our hearts.
And I
think those are big answers.
No, that's great. We've got plenty of time, so you know it's a fine spot, and there's no problem as far as the size. It works out very well, and we appreciate what you're sharing with us, because obviously we can all use help. You know, we can all use a little help and encouragement. The analogy of we're all climbing up this ladder, and there's someone above us and someone below us, and someone above us is there reaching down with their hand to help us up. And we in kind do the same thing to the person below us. And I mean, that's not just community, but that's, you know, supporting everybody's path. I think it's really important for us to consider all of these different things. We're going to consider even more as we continue here on a program. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Taya Sky, TayaSky.com. That is TEHYASKY.com. We're talking about a ceremony called life, and we're going to continue doing just that in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, where we are doing just that, trying to understand where each of us is coming from. You know, you, Sky, you mentioned that, you mentioned, of course, one of the candidates for president, Bernie Sanders, and his attributes as far as actually in the traditional context, not being a real viable candidate. And yet he was extremely viable. People really rallied around what he had to say. And I think it was fantastic. And I wish that things had you know, gone a little different direction. Nonetheless, the Republican candidate for the longest time, at first I started looking at him as a lot of people who weren't real favorable of this gentleman, with a little bit of, you know, angst and so forth. But then I began to see the attributes of the bullies that I grew up with in school. And then I began to sort of pity him from the standpoint that, my gosh, what is it that happened in your life that's caused you to be this way? We all go through our stuff, but yet we all live here. We all have to function together. And unfortunately, I didn't see a lot of that in him as far as being interested in doing that, other than accomplishing what he wanted to accomplish, getting what he wanted to get. I have to say that in the 2000 election, when Al Gore was running, I remember a speech that he was giving, and he talked about the great things that we as Americans, for example, would do. And I thought, great, I'm on your side. I'm with you. Let's go do this thing. And moments later in his speech, basically, I paraphrase, he said, and now here's what the government's going to do for you. And I said, bye-bye. Because he just took away everything that he just gave us in the first part of that speech. When we're going through our lives, and I mean, I'm just using these as examples. I'm not getting political here. I don't want to do that. We don't do that on this program. But as we go through our lives, you know, we think that we don't have the power to live our lives. And I love one of the phrases that you use in terms of living our lives as if they were spiritual. If I'm understanding, I know that's sort of paraphrasing the one particular chapter. But let's talk about that in terms of the aspect of going from the mundane to the spiritual, and I don't know, converting it, reassessing it, perceiving it in a whole different light to say, look, my life is a spiritual life. No, I'm not living in a monastery somewhere in Tibet or somewhere else, cloistered away and praying 23 hours a day. I'm living here in the city with you, but my life is still a spiritual life.
Yeah. So the metaphor that I offer up that can hopefully help us to remember this pervasive spiritual nature of life, ceremony, right? that all of life is a ceremony, and we ought to live our life as this ceremony that it is. And just to, like, do my best in giving a really accurate breakdown of what this means and how we can see this spirituality, you can call it, or just the divine in the mundane, is by beginning by just telling you a little bit about what ceremony is in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the beginning of our conversation, we mentioned a few different ceremonies. We said, oh yeah, okay, a ceremony, for example, when a loved one passes, or a birthday, or a wedding, or birth, or rite of passage, graduation, right? These are ceremonies. When we look at these ceremonies and how we feel when we're there, often what we will notice is that we are quite present. Our presence has heightened, right? And we are more apt to let our hearts open a bit and be vulnerable to whatever is there in front of us. And so, of course, why this is because we believe we're in some sort of special experience, right, that deserves our full attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then because we believe this, we are allowing ourselves to be as present as we actually have the opportunity to be in all moments, of course. And so when we start to regard life as a ceremony, what that means is that we're allowing ourselves to be that present in all moments. And of course, we're human. We're going to have plenty of moments where we're just not present.
Sure.
But the point is that we're reorienting ourselves over and over again back into the present moment with a regard for life, with a regard for the experiences that we're having, with a sense of curiosity and honor that there is something there for us, even when it's challenging, even when it's boring, even when it's whatever, fill in the blank, right?
Mm-hmm.
That there is something there of meaning. And sometimes the meaning is also to just accept that sometimes things just feel meaningless and to let that be enough, right? Just to be present and allowing that to be enough. And then the other part of dropping into this ceremony called life, dropping into this space within ourselves where we can see it in the first place, is very much in starting to discover the spirituality, the divine, that is everyone, everything, everything around us. And what that means, and what that means to me, is that, of course, we're all spiritual. And that actually nothing is spiritual because everything is spiritual. So there's not even that distinction between something that could be spiritual and something that isn't.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and that everything is spiritual because we are literally made of the divine. We didn't create the divine. It's the other way around, right? The
mm-hmm.
human did not create the divine. The divine created us. And everything that we're seeing around us, whether it's a tree or a bird or even like our dresser or a potted plant, everything contains within it that essence of the divine. And so how could it be anything other than miraculous? I mean, take a deep breath, because that is a really big consideration to take in. And it's unrealistic to expect that just because we say it and just because we can get it intellectually, that that means that we're going to then know it within our beings. And that's what it's all about, is letting ourselves drop into that remembrance within our beings beyond the mind, saying, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the final piece of this is perhaps welcoming ourselves into a sense of exploration of what this means, this ceremony called life. So once we can say, oh, yeah, okay, everything around me is actually spiritual, I guess. And, yeah, I can see, for example, that there is space between me and my thoughts. And perhaps there is, you know, a little bit to scratch underneath the surface here, if I scratch a little bit. If we then allow ourselves to have that sense of exploration, to discover what that means, then we can just find ourselves often just taken by the ceremony of life or taken by whatever our unique journeys are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the final piece being, for me, it's traditional meditation, but for each person it can be different. I like to say, and in the book I write about how no matter what door we're going through, whether it's dancing or yoga or chanting mantras, it's all meditation, because ultimately this meditation is bringing us back into silence, right? So, yes, that sense of exploration by showing up for ourselves and doing, not in the sense of doing, but showing up for whatever it is that brings us back to ourselves, to discover the ceremony that is everywhere.
You know, another thought has occurred to me, too. You talk about a ceremony called life, but what about creating within the ceremony called life ceremonies
yes.
along the way? Literally creating a ceremony, not necessarily the marriage, the birth, the graduation, and those types, but maybe the untraditional. Maybe you accomplished something on your job, in your vocation, or at home you finished building something, and so on and so forth. Whatever it is, and it doesn't, and again, great or small, you have a certain level of, shall we say, pride or satisfaction or feeling of accomplishment, and then sort of putting a ceremony to that.
Yes. Well, we're always welcome to do that, aren't we? And we ought to give it to ourselves more. So we can create so many ceremonies in our lives, however we are inspired to. So, for example, if it has to do with something that a milestone we just hit, which is what you basically just said, right, achieving something, which to me I hear milestone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then your ceremony could be, maybe it's taking a day off and going to the beach and just sitting and being with the ocean, or being there with friends, or maybe even having a beer, but just something to acknowledge and say back to God, to the divine, to whatever term resonates for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Saying back, thank you. Yes, this is amazing. Yes, I am witnessing this moment of my life. And I say yes to more of this, right?
Yeah.
And then there are other ways that we can bring it into our day-to-day life as well. And so, for example, one of my husband's and my favorite little things that we do, I'll tell you two actually, is one, we create lemonade from scratch. And it sounds like the most basic thing that you can just overlook easily. And most people will just maybe crave a lemonade and will go to the store and they'll just pick it up and they won't think twice about it. But what we love to do is we grow mint in our yard. And we love to go and water the mint, right? And just be present with this beautiful plant that one day is going to be in our bodies. And so we water it, and we're grateful for it. And then comes the moment where we go and we pick it, and we say thank you. And then we create the lemonade from scratch, and then we drink it. And the whole time it's just filled with our sense of honor for life and our gratitude, and also this acknowledgement for the amazing things that we can create, as simple as lemonade to as huge as a milestone, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, yeah, all these little things that we overlook, that if we slow down and maybe look at how can I just infuse this with my presence, which also, by the way, is a process. So I say how can I, but it's just the invitation to infuse it with our presence. Because our presence, and this is the magical thing that always gets me, our presence is filled already with all of the beautiful visions of our lives, with all of the joy of our heart, even if we don't feel particularly joyful. It's our presence contained within it, all of the magic and truth of our unique existence. And so when we are just allowing ourselves to be that present with whatever it is that we are engaging with, we are multiplying this sense of fulfillment and meaningfulness around our lives, and we will see the good visions of our heart sprout more and more.
I am guessing that the picture of you both on your website as well as on the back of the book is you holding a glass of lemonade?
Actually, it's tea.
Okay.
I drink a lot.
You should have said lemonade. Anyway, actually, you brought back great memories for me because when we lived back in Phoenix, we had this beautiful orange tree in the backyard. And during the season, we would grab the ladder. We'd go out there, and I would climb the ladder, and I would pick from the very tops of the trees. And we would fill, I mean, a large garbage can. We'd line it with plastic first. We'd fill this large garbage can with all of the oranges. And then I would take that garbage can into the garage, and I would set up my assembly line. And, of course, the very first thing I do, I'm slicing the oranges in half and getting them all set up on the cutting board. Then the next, I would squeeze them. You know, I had the electric juicer thing that I pushed down. I had to push down. I mean, this was a semi-automatic, semi-manual. And then I would, of course, go through the process of pouring the juice into the container through the strainer and on and on. And I loved doing it. I mean, it was such a neat experience. Because I love the assembly line concept. It's just, you know, and I would take care of one task and then I'd move on to the next one and then I'd take care of it and move on to the next. Oh yeah, it was fun. I loved going through each of the steps, especially knowing what was at the end. I even did that with, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the fruit, the loquat.
Yeah.
We had one on the property up here, on the property where we live, and we harvested a bunch of those. I did the same thing. Now, a loquat, you want loquat juice? That is a labor-intensive process because they're small. You have to cut them open, get the seed out. But I thought, I want to do this. Man, it was good. I mean, the reward, not only the satisfaction of having done it, but obviously the nectar after the fact. And then at the time we had chickens and gave the pulp to the chickens. So, I mean, but those are little things that you talk about celebrating and acknowledging. And for someone who is searching for a greater sense of purpose and connection, you, Sky, you deconstruct the most common spiritual ideas and empower us to participate wholeheartedly in the magic, and I love this, the mystery of our human incarnation. And, you know, I read a book many, many years ago called Greatest Miracle in the World by Og Mandino, the late Og Mandino. And in it, it talked about how we are miracles and we are so unique. I mean, and then I went through the plethora of examples of why we're so unique. And there is a mystery in that, that, you know, it's interesting. We are always trying to find the answer, you know, we're trying to demystify it by trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But then there are those mysteries, and I'm sure you've run across it in your life, where you don't need to, because it's so cool that it's a mystery.
Oh, yeah. I mean, immediately what I think of is a quote from a book that I read when I was younger that always stuck with me very, very much. I don't remember it perfectly, but it's from Letters to a Young Poet by Rainer Maria Rilke. And in it, Rainer Maria Rilke was writing to a young poet and giving him basically advice for his life. And one of the things that he said to the poet was, do not seek the answers. Learn to love the questions. Like, they're these special things, and that the basically to imagine that there is like a little locked box where all your questions were and the meaning was in there, and that the most beautiful response to those questions is stored for us, like this magical inheritance. So just to learn to love the questions, that was basically what I got from it, and to appreciate the mystery that's on the other side of them. And yes, exactly, life is so mysterious, and we try to control that mystery by trying to answer questions that we have, and we usually aren't even answering them correctly, but just that we even have an answer often just calms that sense of fear that can happen when we get close to the unknown and the mystery. And for me personally, I keep my attention on the mystery every day through all moments, and often I also meditate on death, because we actually don't need to look even beyond death to see that, of course, there's this great mystery that we are in the throes of. And just because our mind has figured out all these patterns and these ways to understand what's in front of us doesn't mean that's the end all and the be all, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this sense of mystery as we allow ourselves, or really as we dare to drop into this sense of mystery within ourselves and within our lives, we come closer to the magic. We come closer to discovering the incredible bounty that the divine has for us when we dare to trust it. And trust means not knowing, but trusting anyway, right?
Yeah,
otherwise,
exactly.
What are you trusting?
Exactly.
So, yeah, the mystery is everywhere. It is everything. And coming into a deeper intimacy is one of the greatest gifts that we can give to ourselves and give to our lives.
Well, I have to say that as we move through our lives, and I kind of put it in this context of, you know, I've been here a scant 56 years. I mean, just puff of smoke, if that. And you're only slightly less of a puff of smoke. But still, our existence is just that, in the enormity of the universe and of time being a concept of man. And yet, for some reason, and I really haven't figured it out. Honestly, haven't tried. All I know is something inside of me tells me that there is meaning to, at least, meaning to my life. My life has meaning. My life has purpose. I need to be about my purpose, doing whatever it is that, you know, I happen to be doing. Because if I didn't have that internal awareness, it wouldn't matter. I could go out, rape, pillage, and plunder. It wouldn't matter. It's no big deal. And I know that a lot of people believe that after this life, there's nothing. It's just darkness. You know, it's like 1 minute the light's on and the next minute the light's off. And I know there are a lot of people, I know them, who are afraid of the light being turned off. That I'm going to live this life and then it's over and there's nothing else? Can we talk a little bit about that in terms of at least not trying to demystify the mystery, okay, but at least giving some, shall we say, encouragement or at least clarity on our existence, and then going back to kind of what we talked about earlier, understanding and acknowledging and being aware of who we always have been in that sort of grand scheme of things, as far as our, shall we say, spiritual and or universal existence? I know it's a big one. I'm sorry, but you just draw out these big questions in me. I can't help it.
I mean, let's go there, you know, because that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, how to best put this? It's funny because last week I was asked the craziest question of all, which is, what is the meaning of life? Okay. And which is essentially what we're talking about now, right, with this question, is the meaningfulness, the point of it all, these deep questions that are within all of us. And the way I see it is like this. And again, actually, I want to mention that also how you just brought up people being afraid of the light going off, and how this life is so temporary. And what I see through all of this is just tremendous creative freedom. That this life is just this total gift where we get to come in and have this wild and unique experience of being human. Like, it's completely far out being a human. And we have the privilege to experience ourselves and to also watch our lives manifest according to what we put out there, right? Whether it's the thoughts we believe or the emotions we encourage within ourselves or whatever our focus is, we can see life unfold as a reflection of ourselves. Now, what that means, right, just in case that's maybe a little bit too abstract for anyone who's listening, is that if I'm really upset one day and I'm just having, we all can imagine, having a really, really hard day and all these things are coming up, I can either feel like a victim to the repetitiveness of being human and going through challenging things, right? And perhaps spiral downward because of that perspective and see it all around me in the conversations I have. All of a sudden, my husband says something to me and I just feel really sensitive to it because life just feels so cruel and I feel like a victim to it. Or it can reorient my perspective to look at what is a gift. What am I learning? Why is this coming up for me again, right? Which, of course, is just bridging us back to the earlier conversation we were having about vulnerability. And by doing that, by going into my vulnerability, rather than looking at it as a curse and feeling doomed to it, going through it with awareness and with compassion towards myself to discover what the gift is there. And why this is relevant now is because, in example A, I would be focusing on victimness and then seeing that unfold in my life, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe going through an illness that I wouldn't necessarily otherwise go through, or relationships becoming more challenging, right? The point is I would be seeing the reflection of my perspective in my life, right? Or example B, just by being present with it and compassionate to myself and doing my best to stay truthful and clean the mirror of perspective, I can see the gifts. I can come to the learnings, which is perhaps in that example, I actually even have the power at all to move through this and to realize that my vulnerability is a gift, just to keep it so simple, right? And then because of that, I continue to create in my life as I truly intend to. So rather than being dominated by the aspects of my mind that are limiting me, or the wounds of the past that I don't want to look through, rather than that, continue to work with all of the moments as a total gift and create this beautiful unfolding that life is all about. So now thanks for bearing with me, because I know that I'm going pretty deep, and for whatever reason, I'm just being called to go there in this conversation with this.
That's fine.
So maybe there's some people listening who are hopefully saying, yes, this is just what I need, because that's what I'm going to trust, because this is just pouring through me right now like this. But even so, I want to circle back to the very just basic practical question you asked, which was, like, what is the point of it all?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why continue? Not why continue, but like, yeah, sometimes why continue to go through the challenging things we go through, and what happens when the light goes out? And just to say that life is a mystery, and we can either go through it not believing in our sense of power and feeling like victims to the things that we have gone through, and, you know, just continuing to play out the things that we already know don't work for us. Or we can see that because life is such a creative experience, we can choose to have a more empowered experience and continuously just work with every moment for the ceremony that it is to create the good visions of our lives.
Well, I like the answer. I think it's very appropriate under the circumstances. And I'm curious. I don't know why this just came to me, but like I said before, the universe asks questions. I'm just along for the ride. I'm curious as to the depth at which your husband is involved, not specifically in what you're doing. But obviously, when you're in a relationship and then there's a couple, you know, there's that connection and all of that. Where is he in all of this?
Well, my husband is my mirror, right? And he's my co-creator. He's my partner in magic, or also sometimes when we're going through challenging times, it's still magic, but it may not feel like it. So where is my husband in all of this? I mean, he's right beside me, and our relationship is just this constant unfolding of how do we really mean to be living our lives, and what am I seeing in you, whether it's like misinterpreting something you're saying, or judging you, or all these little things that can come up in a relationship that can lead me back to wholeness. And so just to put it really simply, one of the greatest gifts of our relationship is that I know that when I'm feeling like a sense of separation from him, maybe I'm upset about something or, you know, whatever it is, that that's a signal to me that I'm moving into separation within myself. And so perhaps the greatest gift of the relationship, or one of them really, is this constant mirror to see, am I moving out of love? Am I, in other words, moving by fear? Or am I coming from love? And so it's a constant meditation in moving by love, never by fear, no matter how hard it is to stay in love sometimes. When we're just so angry, or it seems like we're being so misunderstood, or whatever our trip is. So often we might want to really come from fear and be right, or any of those trips, but just continuously coming from love.
Mm.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a book I read many years ago called by Gerald Jampolsky called Love is Letting Go of Fear. But I have to tell you, that's going back a long way. For me, that's going back a ways. But it's nice memories. This is, to me, this is so much fun to pursue this. I have been, I guess I can use the term, I have been a student, so to speak, of ritual and tradition and ceremony, probably because of my Roman Catholic upbringing. And I've always been drawn to those types of things and how important they are. I've asked those kinds of questions, especially when we start talking about maleness and femaleness, and you know, when does a girl become a woman? When does a boy become a man? And there are so many different cultures that have their different traditions and what have you. For me, it's extremely important to try to understand and to incorporate some of these types of things into our lives, instead of just going from day to day to day to day, the same old, and using the word mundane life, you know, Monday through Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday, you do whatever it is you do, and then you repeat, wash, rinse, and repeat, wash, rinse, and repeat, you know, and over and over and over again, and nothing. And then you wonder why. You're bored. You wonder why you're dissatisfied. You know, you wonder why you feel stuck and you're tired. And it doesn't. And what I find fascinating, Skye, it doesn't take much.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
A ceremony called life. Tell me about incorporating some additional things that, again, don't take much.
Yeah. Meditation. Wake up a little bit earlier than you usually do. Even 30 minutes is a significant meditation for most of us. And begin your day from the heart like that, from dropping into your intentions for the day, dropping into the place within where you want to be coming from for the day. Meditating in the mornings is like just one of the most powerful things we can do. And of course, I can't generalize for everyone, but this is usually a pretty strong thing for most of us. And if it's not meditation in the morning, then what is it for you? Because we're all different. So maybe your meditation is happening when you go for a run, or when you're out in the garden, or when you're reading poetry, or when you're playing music, or whatever your thing is, right?
Mm.
Like I said earlier, when we're really present with any of these things that we're doing, we're meditating. We're in this intimacy with the moment. And that's what it's all about. So, like I said, if it's not meditation, just discovering, exploring yourself to see where you enjoy being that present and giving that gift to yourself. It's as simple as that. And we can do that, and just to mention also, we can do that even with what's already happening too, meaning our morning coffee or tea or whatever you drink, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It's a ritual. You're drinking it, most of us, every morning. It's the same routine. You wake up, you turn on your coffee machine, you make your coffee or your tea. And that is a ritual. There is a repetition there. It is starting your day, and it deserves your attention, your love, and your presence. It can be a prayer. And it is anyway, because our message is being communicated to spirit either way. But when we're aware of our message and we're sending the message that we really intend to be, then we start to notice the incredibleness and the synchronicities that unfold as we carry on. So that's what I say. Meditation in whatever way is your way to meditate.
You are also a poet.
Yeah, and I didn't know it. I am.
I wasn't going there.
Somehow I did, and I'm not proud of it, but it happened.
Okay.
So.
Well, tell me about your poetry and especially the influences.
My influences in poetry are Mary Oliver. When I was younger, it was E. Cummings. He was like my one. And also Henry David Thoreau somehow. And what I can tell you about my journey with poetry is that before I was what you could say maybe more overtly spiritual, before I was like on an obvious spiritual path, and I wasn't into any of that stuff when I was young, mm-hmm. I was into poetry. And poetry was this vehicle into myself, into the depths of my soul, and whatever I was feeling. In other words, poetry was my meditation, like we were just talking about, into that intimacy. And so poetry has just always been really big in my life. Whenever I was going through something huge as a child, emotionally, poetry was my catharsis. And I wasn't proud of it. It wasn't something that I shared with other people. It was often very dark. And it wasn't even anything that I wanted to be doing. But I couldn't help myself. It was like I'd become, my hands would like become possessed. And I'd be going through something and the words would just come. And then by the time the poem had completed itself, I was a new person. I had completely shifted. Something new within my soul had been moved into. So it's just, you know, it's a very strong part of me, but I also don't write very often. I mean, there can be period of time where I'm writing more often, but generally it's so far in my life, it's been almost reserved for these very strong emotional experiences. Then the poem comes, you know? So that's my story with poetry. And I do have some pieces listed on my website. So for anyone who's curious, you can travel over there.
That website is Tehasky, TEHYASKY.com, where you can check out a myriad of things. You can also get a free first chapter of the book, Ceremony Called Life. All you do is just go to click on the link at the very top of the page, and it'll take you to another page where you can just pop in your email address and follow the prompts and all that good stuff and enjoy chapter one. And that, I think that will instill you, inspire you to pick up the book in its entirety. It's available at Amazon. And again, a Ceremony Called Life. And we encourage you to do just that. Go to her website, tehasky.com. When your morning coffee is as sacred as holy water. And Sky, I want to thank you again so much. We're not finished yet. I encourage you, too, that if you find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Thank you. That would be great.
And before we let you go, I have three final questions for you that I put to all my guests. And again, I thank you so much for sharing your time with us. First of all, who is Tehasky?
Why don't you let me know when you find out?
Yeah, but that's not my question to answer.
In other words, I don't think there's an answer to that. I'm just this, you know, vehicle of spirit, just like anybody else. That's what resonates for me,
okay.
Having this wild experience of life.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Yeah, so for me, it has less to do with achievement, because I like to take myself back to just that simplicity of being. And so to me, what I hope is unfolding from the work that I'm sharing is just, what's best case is that it's resonating for people, and which I've already gotten lots of feedback that it is, and just this beautiful exchange between me and the people that connect with my work and the magic that happens from that. That's really the most exciting and tantalizing part of it for me, is that magic that happens when we just share whatever's true for us, and then it touches somebody, and then they put some energy out there in the world, and there's this beautiful, like, ripple effect. So it's as simple as that, really.
And though you may have addressed this even throughout the program, I'm going to ask you directly. What is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose. Well, when you say that, what I hear is, like, what is the unique being me, Sky? What is my thing on this earth in this lifetime? And it seems to be writing and sharing through words. So, and also working directly with people, which is something that I really love to do, support other people's journeys. So that seems to be like my what I would call a design, right? How we're also influenced by the stars we're born under and everything like that. But purpose is, this is another word like ambition that I don't connect with so much, and like I appreciate it also. But I don't feel like it's my purpose. The purpose for me would feel more like just to enjoy life, just to be here and get the most out of this experience called life.
Well, I am grateful for you sharing a portion of your life with us here today on the program, as well as your latest work, which is a ceremony called Life. And we encourage everyone to go to your website and check out not only the book, but the poetry as well, and take a look at that very first chapter and have some fun with that, and then pick up a copy of the book. And again, we thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Richard.
Once again, it's TeahSky.com, TeahSky.com. We encourage you to go there and check out her latest work, again, A Ceremony Called Life. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.